Come be a part of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics with your host, Dr. Ed Holliday. Hear the voices of liberty speaking all across America. Doc Holliday provides thought-provoking interviews and commentary about the issues and actions that are afflicting this country and what we need to do to get America back on track. Get fired up. Get inspired. Get on board with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right now.
And here we go.
Once again, that's the sound of rock cracking. But listen, this is a celebration season. We have Christmas coming up this week, and we wish you all a Merry Christmas. We have our Jewish friends in the midst of Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah to you. We send out our salute to you. And I just want everyone, all our listeners, some of you may be non-believers, some of you may be of other religions, but I want to tell you, we wish you a very best of seasons. And this show is very special because we are talking about Cuba and how it affects the 2016 elections. You might not have thought of some of the things that are happening as President Obama has put Cuba on the front pages. But not only that, we also are going to talk about more than just presidential whispers. We're going to talk about some presidential announcements, and we'll go through some of that like we have as we get ready to end up the year 2014. 2016 is on so many minds, and we're going to talk about that. And at the end of the show, hang on with us. You'll hear something here at Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics you may not have ever heard. Probably nobody's ever heard exactly a correct nativity story. The nativity scenes we all see with the wise men and the shepherds, and we know those are incorrect. But since I went to Jerusalem this past year, and I was there in the midst of Israel and the Holy Land, and got to go to a shepherd's cave, I'm going to give you the correct nativity story at the end of the show. So if you want to hear the real story of Christmas by Doc Holliday, then don't touch your dial. Don't stop the show till you hear it to the complete end. So you want to hear that story because it's never been told anywhere else but right here on Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. Now, in just a minute, we're going to get into our story about Cuba and how it will affect the 2016 elections for president. But before we do that, let me tell you something that happened in this past midterm that you won't hear anywhere else because I haven't heard anyone bring it up and talk about it. But it's very, I'll just say it's very interesting to see what happened by a group called the National Organization for Marriage. And it does have implications for the 2016 presidential elections, especially when you talk about Republican primaries. But I do want to tell you that what happened with the National Organization for Marriage, they stand for marriage between one man and one woman. And we've talked about it. We've had the president of the National Organization for Marriage, Brian Brown, on this show two or three times. We helped break the story about the IRS scandal involving their group where information of their donors was leaked. It's a criminal offense, and the IRS was found in a court of law guilty, but of course nobody's been prosecuted because the person who got the information was the co-chair of President Barack Obama's re-election campaign of 2012, and his co-chair has pleaded the Fifth Amendment. And so there's no way, unless the IRS would dig into it, which we know they're just not going to do it. So they paid the National Organization for Marriage $50,000 and won't dig into it anymore. That's just the way this administration strong arms folks. But saying all that, that has nothing to do with exactly what I'm bringing up now. But what happened in the midterms of 2014... But the organization supported people who believed in marriage between one man and one woman. And they worked in concert with newly organized Super PAC called the National Organization of Marriage Victory Fund. And it primarily targeted two close races for the United States Senate with significant independent expenditures for television ad buys and mailers. And they wanted to help elect a marriage champion over incumbents dedicated to redefining marriage. And that was Tom Tillis of North Carolina. And we talked about on this show how he was going against the incumbent Kay Kagan in North Carolina, and he defeated her. It was a close race. Nobody knew exactly how it was going to turn out. They came in and they supported Tom Tillis, who won. He also gave their support to Tom Cotton in Arkansas, who defeated Mark Pryor, who had spoken for gay marriage. And so we have this group that's coming in to help defeat not only Democrats, but listen to this. In addition, they were able to work with their grassroots and others to help elect. They supported Joni Ernst in Iowa, and who defeated her Democrat opponent. And then they supported Pat Roberts in Kansas to help beat Greg Orman because he had spoken out against marriage between one man and one woman and not protecting that. So they had efforts in those places and won. And they also helped Governor Sam Brownback, who was behind like 20 points somewhere in the summer, and he came back and got his reelection bid for governor of Kansas. But this is the interesting part here, because they also targeted several pro-same-sex marriage Republicans for defeat. This is what you need to understand, and nobody else is reporting this, but you're hearing it on Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, because this group, the National Organization for Marriage, targeted one of the, we talked about here, the Oregon candidate, the Republican candidate for the Oregon Senate seat. And we talked about Jason Conyers, who was running in a primary against Dr. Webby, a lady who, a neurosurgeon who came in and ran, and everybody thought this was the perfect Republican to win in Oregon because she was she didn't have a strong stance against abortion, and she was not a strong pro-life advocate. And she also came out with ads saying she was for same-sex marriage, a Republican running for same-sex marriage. So the National Organization for Marriage went in, even though her opponent was also for gay marriage, they went in and said they were not support. In fact, they would work to defeat a Republican that did not stand up for marriage between one man and one woman. And they went into that race and they helped defeat Monica Webby. She was the Republican nominee, but they wanted to make sure she didn't win. Now, do you get that? Does this affect the primaries coming up in 2016? Nobody else is talking about it, but you're hearing it here. And they went on, and they were also against the, there was a Republican nominee, Richard Tessie, in Massachusetts, in a congressional race, District Number 6. And also, there was a pro-gay marriage Republican, Carl DiMario, in California, Congressional District 52. They thought he was going to win. He got help from Boehner and the Republican establishment, but the National Organization for Marriage put money in to help defeat these Republican candidates. And that's, they went on, and you may not remember, we talked about it here a couple years ago when in New York, where they was one of the largest states to first adopt gay marriage. And they went in, and there were about four state senators who were Republicans who voted to redefine marriage. And of those four, that I think it's over the last 4 years, every one of them has been defeated, again, by the National Organization of Marriage, falling through on their promise to go against the Republicans who stood up for, who did not stand up for marriage between one man and one woman. So those are things that will have implications for the primary in the Republican field if somebody stands up for gay marriage, will automatically get money poured in against them. And that brings us up to what does it mean for this Cuba, the what President Obama has done to start normalizing relationship with the country of Cuba after 50 years of just cutting it off from American economic might. So how would it affect the 2016 elections? First, let's talk about, let me run you some clips. They let, I guess, the Republicans in the Senate pretty much let Marco Rubio handle this situation, what the president just did. So let's listen from Marco Rubio, Republican senator from the state of Florida. It is high on the list of possible Republican contenders for 2016. And this is what he was given an answer to when someone asked him about the Pope being an influential in helping President Barack Obama make his decision about Cuba.
Understanding is that the influence that His Holiness had was on the release of Mr. Gross, which I've not criticized. As I said, I'm happy that he's with the Cuban people. I would also ask His Holiness to take up the cause of freedom and democracy, which is critical for a free people, for a people to truly be free. I think the people of Cuba deserve the same chances to have democracy as the people of Argentina have had, where he comes from, as the people of Italy have, where he now lives, obviously in the Vatican's its own state, but very nearby. My point is, I hope that people with that sort of prestige on the world stage will take up the cause of freedom and democracy. The Cuban people are the only people in this hemisphere that have not been able to elect a leader in more than 55 or 60 years. It's outrageous. And for us to basically, for this government under Barack Obama, to unilaterally give up all the things they gave up in exchange for nothing on the side of democracy is unacceptable in my mind.
Well, that was Senator Marco Rubio. And did this moment where Marco Rubio can stand up to President Barack Obama and not say you are completely wrong, but did you hear what Senator Rubio said? He said, why would you exchange where America gives so much to help Cuba normalizing relations and didn't get any demands met to help to push Cuba toward democracy? And he said that was not a good choice. And I agree with Senator Rubio. But now this is the question that I'm asking you, the listeners, and think about. Does President Obama's Cuba decision open up a door for Senator Marco Rubio to leapfrog ahead of other contenders? Now, if you remember, Marco Rubio was high on the list back when he was first elected. Then the immigration push, which he supported and pushed in the Senate, got him set back against a lot of the conservatives, the Tea Party group. And his stand with the immigration bill coming out of the Senate really watered down his potency to be an effective Republican leader. But now this Cuba situation has all of a sudden elevated him into a position that makes him look strong for freedom. And he's coming from the Cuban community, the Hispanic Latino vote, looking at what he says about freedom and how he handles this situation. Very, very important to understand how the election of the for in the primaries, a Republican nominee can be affected by events orchestrated at the White House. I'm not saying the White House did this for Marco Rubio, but I'm saying that all of a sudden a name is lifted up by events that happen at the White House. But he's not the only Hispanic potential Republican to run. There's also Ted Cruz from Texas. His father's been on this show, Rock Splitting Politics, and his father was a Cuban, born in Cuba, and had to immigrate to America at the threat of losing his life. And what an amazing story of freedom he is. And you can go back in our archives and find that with Rafael Cruz. What a good show we had with him. And I'm just telling you that Ted Cruz is right here, and his position is going to be blasting the administration like Rubio did as far as the what President Obama didn't ask for any demands for Cuba to normalize an economic relationship that will benefit the Cuban people. And it may be something that needs to be re-looked at, but what we have to do is not give away the store. I mean, every time Barack Obama negotiates, remember how he got the Iranians to the table about the nuclear bomb by giving them $8 billion? $8 billion were frozen in assets. He unleashed that just for them to come to the table. Why does America give up so much in negotiations and doesn't ask for things in return? And we see this pattern repeated, and that's why, let me play this clip. Well, I tell you what, it's time for a break. After this break, you're going to hear from Charles Krautheimer and what he thinks about America giving up. What does it mean when we give up in negotiations, this administration? He has some interesting points on that. But before we get to that, take a listen to this.
Greetings of Orient are, and is it habits of heart, feel the fountain more and mountain, following on the star.
Are you bearing gifts this Christmas season? Well, you can bear forth with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. Go ahead, get your order in. You can go to the webpage, click on the picture, and you can get a copy for your friends, your neighbors, your liberal friends, and your conservative friends. Go ahead, tell them Doc Holliday wanted you to read Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. It's more than just a radio show. We're a book, and you can go there and order that book. This is a season of giving. Hey, it carries on into the new year. If you get a gift card, Amazon.com, hey, you can get the book on Amazon. And our international listeners, again, go through Amazon and order your book, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. We're glad to help get the message out. And let me tell you that I do enjoy the listeners, your feedback. Thank you for the emails. Keep bringing them in. I can't answer them all, but I do want to say this. It's encouraging when I hear people talking about the show, when I hear that this show, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, can help start conversations. Go back and listen to the show if you didn't hear about the Ferguson fallout, our show about that, and the show after that when I got to sit down and have dinner with Alveda King, who just came back from Ferguson, Missouri. And I'm telling you, there's some things that you won't hear anywhere else but here on Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. We are a voice of reason. I love the Tea Party. I love Republicans. Hey, I love liberal Democrats because, you know, you go back and listen to the archives. I had one of my good friends, who Bishop Clarence Parks, He loves Barack Obama, and I let him have a full show telling why he thinks President Barack Obama is good and has been good for America. You know, I don't agree with his policies, but I wanted you to hear from Bishop Parks because, again, this is a show to help you understand what's going on in America. You're not going to hear just drivel from the right. I want you to understand what's driving America forward. And I want you to understand why we have hope here at Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. We have hope for America because I got four children, ages 17, 14, 11, and 9, and I care about this country. I love this country. I want to know more about what makes it tick, and that's why we do this show, so you can better understand. And together, we're going to get this nation turned around and making progress for freedom and democracy, not only for America, but we'll encourage it around the world when we get our act together here in America. So keep listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. We're going to kick off some new stuff in 2015, and we're going to be glad to have you here for the ride. So with all that, it's time to listen to Charles Krauthammer. If you remember, we heard from Marco Rubio in the first part of the show, and now we were talking about Cuba, and his response, what it might mean for his political aspirations. But Charles Krauthammer from Fox News had, this is his thoughts about what a world is seeing about America. Take a listen.
Charles?
I think if we do ultimately totally normalize relations, that's going to be an issue that will no longer come up. Right. It'll be assumed that 50 years is your statute of limitation. Let me just say, can I add one note? Cuba in and of itself doesn't matter as a geopolitical issue for the United States. It did in the Cold War. It doesn't now. It's a small island. But what this does is it sends a signal to places that do matter. Persian Gulf, Eastern Europe, the Pacific Rim allies, that if you've got a bully in a neighborhood, you've got somebody who's not only anti-democratic but anti-American, this administration will appease them, and you have to watch your back because there is no one. You've counted on America for 50 years to watch your back. It's not watching your back. This is a president who wants to leave his mark by quote-unquote improving relations with the worst regimes on earth, and that's what he wants to do.
Wow. See, Charles Krauthammer hits the nail on the head when he says that President Obama wants to leave his legacy and his mark improving relations with the worst regimes on earth. But what does that tell the allies? It's almost the same thing with the immigration and the debate that goes on in America now with Barack Obama single-handedly makes 5 million people non-citizens all of a sudden become legal. They're not necessarily citizens, but they become legal in America. If he can do that with a stroke of a pen, then as he normalizes relations with Cuba, that just keeps telling the allies, the people who stuck with us for 50 years, they say, well, you know, what you did was worthless. And people, Krauthammer said, the people in the Persian Gulf, those in Asia and other places, will America stand behind its allies? And with Barack Obama, the answer is no. He didn't stand by Poland when they wanted to keep some defense systems to help protect against Russia that the Bush administration put in. He just pulled a rug right out from under Poland. He's done so many things against our ally Israel that no American president has done until he came into office, forcing Israel to make tough decisions that you shouldn't have to make. And so this president is leaving an international world wondering, where does America stand? And that's something I thought he pointed out very well. So those are the things, what I wanted to get to here in just the next segment before we finish up with our unique Christmas story, nativity scene, is Jeb Bush last week said that he was forming an exploratory committee. And that sent really a shot across the bow to Mitt Romney. We've heard that Mitt was thinking about maybe getting in this thing again for the third time. And people were talking Mitt up and calling about Mitt-menum. Instead of momentum, is Mitt-menum. But I think that was shot across the bow to tell Mitt to put up or shut up, because Jeb Bush and Mitt Romney will be running again in the same middle-of-the-road type moderate Republican. And that is very interesting. I really didn't think Jeb Bush would try to come in as a third Bush. It also helps Hillary Clinton in a way, because if Bush became the nominee, I think right now, if Hillary Clinton wins the Democratic nomination, which is, if you're a betting person, that seems to be who would win it. But what Hillary Clinton does is look like an old politician. When they ridiculed John McCain for running because he was so old back in 2008, and Hillary Clinton's going to be about the same age now, and she's been around so long that it may be hard for the youth to get fired up for this Democrat nominee. And I think that's a big problem. But if Jeb Bush runs, the Bush name goes back, and it almost helps Hillary by not looking like she's so old, because the old Bush-Clinton run from 1992 with Jeb Bush's father running against Bill Clinton. So those are some aspects that are shaping up 2016 election. We got a long way to go, But I told you about what was happening with the Cuba project that the president's brought forward in normalizing relations is going to put Marco Rubio front and center in the limelight, talking about standing up for freedom. And he knows the Cuban community because his parents came from Cuba. The regime, the Castro regime, with all its human rights abuses, when these things start playing out, we don't know exactly which way we'll see the population of America where the poll numbers go. But Ted Cruz's father, like I said, was very much standing up for freedom fighter. He loves freedom. So interesting to see how this will play in Republican primary politics. We'll keep you posted right here on Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. But this is what makes America interesting. And before we get to the correct nativity story I told you about, we're going to end the show with, let me play this one clip from the Texas Liberal Democrat United States House of Representatives Barbara Lee about what she thought on Raul Castro and his human rights and why Barack Obama's doing what he's doing. Take a listen to Representative Lee.
Human rights, if you have an embargo where you're not engaged in talks and discussions, and I think with more Americans going to Cuba, when you talk about democracy, when you talk about issues of free speech, all of those issues are issues that both sides need to talk about, address, and come together and deal with. But remember, you know, this is going to take two countries engaging. You can't be isolated from the rest of the world if, in fact, human rights concerns, which there are many human rights concerns, again, everywhere in the world, you have to have some form of bilateral engagement to address them.
And in some ways, I agree with Congressman Lee, but she's talking about bilateral engagement, and she did talk about human rights, and you have to have some kind of open relationship, but you don't just give away the store to get that relationship. You should put pressure on the country to do more democratic reforms. But she did end up, remember, Representative Lee said bilateral engagement to address these problems. You know, has she thought about President Obama using bilateral engagements when he wants to make a unilateral decree from the White House on immigration? Would he not sit down with Republicans and use bilateral engagement? And why not? he thinks it's good with Cuba, normalizing relations with Cuba. Why doesn't he normalize relations with the Republicans in the Congress? I hope he will. And that's how we're going to end up this part of the show in Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. Next week, we are going to be talking about some of these things. I know it's year end. We'll do some year end reviews and get ready for predictions for next year. And a lot on the plate. You don't want to miss any show of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. But as I promised, we're going to end with a correct version of the nativity story. So let me go right into it. As we know, when you look at a nativity scene, there's the wise men and the shepherds, and there's a little manger. And a manger is made out of wood, and there's a little baby in a manger. There's Mary and Joseph, shepherds, wise men. Were they all ever together? No. You know, I think it was put together in the Middle Ages to help tell the Christmas story with symbols. And in that way, I like nativity scenes. But let me tell you the real story, how it happened from what we read. And it goes back a long time ago, before baby Jesus was ever born. There was a prophecy going back to the book of Daniel. Now, some people say Daniel never lived because he couldn't really have told everything as accurate as what happened when he interpreted dreams of Nebuchadnezzar. We're not going to go all into that, but we do know if Daniel lived, then the people who say there's no way he could have done that, they ought to fear God because he got it right. If it's real prophecy, I believe it was. But saying all that, we know that Daniel, he was his home country in Jerusalem, Israel, was defeated by Nebuchadnezzar, and they pulled the top brightest young people out, and he made it into Babylon and became interpreted dreams from Nebuchadnezzar, and he rose above. So he was in command of all the magicians and soothsayers and all the astronomers and the smart people of the kingdom of Babylon, all the wise men. Basically, he was in charge of the wise men of Babylon, and he was for years. And even under a different, the Persians came in, and even under Cyrus, one of the great first world leaders with Cyrus. And just as a coincidence, Cyrus's tomb is still in the country of Iran. You can go and see Cyrus, who was the first great Persian leader. And on his tomb, incidentally, you talk about prophecy from Daniel, and he talked about what we call end time and end of the world prophecies that a lot of the Christians know about in the book of Revelation, but most of it is on that. Coming from the book of Daniel. Daniel first prophesied these things. He got the word from who he said that he called the word from the Lord. And like he knew all the leaders and kings. It was the Babylonians. And then when the Babylonians were defeated by the Persians, Cyrus became king. And his tomb, like I was telling you, on his tomb, what is on his tomb today? There was in no other ancient civilization, any leader's tomb, it's on his tomb is a cross. Now, did Daniel tell King Cyrus that, hey, at the end time, you need a cross? I don't know. I'm not saying that. And the other thing I don't know is what all did Daniel tell the wise men? But I believe Daniel told the wise men of Babylon to watch for certain star or effect in the sky. And when it happened, when Jesus was born, they said the wise men saw a star in the east. And they're from the east. So the star wasn't sitting over top of Israel. The star was in the east. So somehow they had to see the sign and the star moved. So the wise men, some people who had to know some kind of prophecy, probably from David. Now, can you find this in the Bible? No, I am speculating and telling you so and set up the real nativity Christmas story. But we do know the Bible says the wise men saw the star in the east, and they had to see it moving. And then they had to come to the conclusion, hey, this means the king of the Jews is born. And when that star got over them, they told their wives, told everybody, hey, we're going to pack up and follow the star. Now, how would you like to tell your family, I'm going to go, I don't know how far I'm going to go, but I'm going to follow the star. But they did that. And they followed the star. But on the night that Jesus was born, the shepherds came. When the wise men first saw the star. So they were not all there in the nativity scene. The little drummer boy couldn't come along and help the wise men give another gift. But what we do know, the shepherds came to see the baby wrapped in swaddling clothes lying in a manger. Now, there's no wood in the land of Israel. I mean, there is wood, but you don't see mangers made out of wood. They're made out of stone. So baby Jesus was probably lay down in a cold stone manger. Probably had some hay in there. We don't know, but where was it? Because no room for them in the inn. More than likely, they were in a shepherd's cave. I got to go in one this past year. And you can see in those caves where the shepherds would come in. And a lot of times on cold nights, they'd bring the sheep in with them into these little caves that are in the hills of Judea. And there, more than likely, was a place where Jesus was actually born. And the shepherds found the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes and lying in a manger. And we know that is not the picture we see in all the scenes in your Christmas postcards. But the shepherds were there, and they were amazed. The angels told them where to go find the shepherds, and they were scared. But they saw the baby, and it says they went throughout the town explaining the words they'd heard about this baby. And, of course, shepherds were lowly. They were looked down upon, and everybody probably thought they were crazy, out of their minds, and they didn't give it a lot of thought. But where is the star now? Well, that night, the star evidently appeared. The wise men saw it as the star passed over them. They said, let's follow the star, and they went west following the star. And it does say they went to talk to King Herod. And Herod, of course, said, hey, king of the Jews. Now, he knew he didn't have anybody just born, so that got him worried. And that's the story about King Herod killing the babies of Bethlehem. And the wise men did go on to Bethlehem. And Jesus was probably a couple years old when they got there. But the star above where baby Jesus lady wasn't a baby then. Again, toddler Jesus, you could say. So the correct nativity story moves along with time in a couple of years. And one day, maybe we can make a nativity scene with computers that will show the whole story the way it correctly happened. So that's the Doc Holliday's correct nativity story for you to share with others. And maybe I would have put that in a book sometime. But that's the way we'll end the show, and I'll say Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night. See you next week.
Thanks for joining us today, and remember to listen again next week for another edition of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You can order Ed's new book, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, Tea Party versus the Status Quo, by clicking on the book cover right in front of you on the screen. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.